Hey there. Welcome to episode 36 of Social Business Engine, the podcast for business professionals interested in hearing from thought leaders, marketers, and social influencers as they share their experiences, wisdom, and insights to help you advance your social business journey. I'm your host, Bernie Borges of Find and Convert. On this episode, you're going to meet Jill Conrath. Jill is the author of three best-selling books, Agile Selling, Selling to Big Companies, and Snap Selling. She knows what it takes to win business in today's changing marketplace. Jill speaks frequently at sales meetings and conferences. She's been featured on ABC News, Fortune, Forbes, The New York Times, and more. And over 130,000 sellers read her award-winning blog. On this episode, you're going to learn how to become the boss of your brain for improved selling results. Seriously. Hey, this episode is sponsored by Sprinklr, the only end-to-end social relationship infrastructure, so you can go from doing social to being social. And now here's my interview with Jill Conrath. Well, Jill, welcome to the Social Business Engine podcast.
Well, thank you for having me, Bernie. It's good to be here today.
Terrific. Well, Jill, you know, here on the Social Business Engine podcast, we talk about a lot of topics that are important to people that are on the social business journey and really focused on growing their business and, you know, making that transition to being social. So you are a selling expert. You've written three best-selling books on sales topics, your most current one being Agile Selling. Let's begin with, where does that fit into a social business? Where does Agile Selling fit into a social business?
Well, what's going on a lot out there is that people are leveraging social media in all shapes, forms, and manners to attract people to their website, to attract them into a conversation, to find people who may be having problems or issues that are solvable by their product or services. So in one sense, the whole social world out there is either a research database or a clarion call of opportunities. And to me, that's really what it is. It's like I leverage social media all the time, but social media, the social world isn't anything unless you start to have conversations with customers. And that is not necessarily all done via online channels.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get human beings involved in the conversation sometimes, you know?
Right. So as I mentioned earlier, this is your third book. You've written three books on selling. So what inspired you to write one that's called Agile Selling?
Okay, let me give you a little journey. The first book I wrote is called Selling to Big Companies, and the reason I wrote it is because everybody I was talking to, including myself, was functionally unable to get anybody on the phone
uh-huh.
or get them to respond to emails. And it was like, how in the world can you grow your company if nobody answers the phone, nobody responds to you at all? So mm-hmm. I spent a full year working on that to try to figure out what works, and that's what that first book is about. The second book came into being because suddenly I was working with really good prospects or even good customers, and they would say, oh my God, Jill, we really truly want to do what you're talking with us about. Let's get back next week and talk about it. And then I get back to them next week and they wouldn't return my call.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd email them and they wouldn't return my email. And then, you know, 7 or 8 messages later, I thought I was losing it and I could have sworn that they were interested. But then I thought I'd probably done something to offend them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized in this process is that it wasn't about me. It was suddenly that my prospects were crazy busy.
Right.
And this crazy busyness was the dominant theme that we were facing as we were trying to get buy-in to move ahead, you know, with different projects with our business. And so I spent a full year studying how do you deal with crazy busy people. And that's what Snap Selling is all about.
Hmm.
As soon as Snap Selling came out, I started getting responses from people who were reading it. And they said, oh my God, Jill, this is like, it's working, you know. Suddenly these people are answering my calls, they're returning my messages, we're moving things along, we're shortening a sales cycle. And then they'd say, but you know what, Jill, I am crazy busy too.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have for me? I was like, I looked at him just like, you know, with my eyes wide open going, well, I'm not a time management specialist. Like, I don't have anything. This is not me. That's not my problem. But the problem that kept being asked, what do you have for me? And I kept giving the same response for a long time. And then one day it was like a big hit over my head when I realized that it wasn't a time management issue. It was an information management issue. And that people were constantly being charged with having to learn more, take in more, figure this out, learn new technologies, try this. You know, it's like we're inundated with information. It's hard to sort through what's important from what just floods into our inbox and is dumped on our desk. And if you change jobs at all, it's even worse, you know, from that standpoint. So I realized that the salespeople weren't saying to me, help me be a better time manager. They were saying to me, how do I be successful when everything is constantly changing and I am constantly in a learning mode, or I'm never feeling like I know enough. So agile selling is in response to that. It's how to get up to speed fast and how to learn what you need to learn quickly so you can be effective in a constantly changing world. That's why I wrote it.
Okay, terrific. Well, I really appreciate that perspective, that journey of the three books and how each one came about. So thank you for sharing that. Now, you talk about the agile mindset, and I'm a big believer in the mindset thing. You know, anybody that's on the social business journey understands that they have to create the mindset within their enterprise, and that can mean a lot of different things. So what do you mean by the agile mindset in this context?
Well, from an agile mindset, you know, from the context that you're talking about, I would say that what we're really looking for is a culture, and either a culture for an organization or an individual mindset of always growing, that you're constantly being in the learning mode. And so what we have to realize is that people are never done learning, that they're always going to have to learn more. So what we have to do is be willing to change anything that might look like failure into a learning experience. We have to eradicate the word failure from our vocabulary and really focus on how can we learn from everything that we do. And we also have to have a culture of experimentation, that we never know the right thing. We never know the answer. There are multiple answers, some of which may be righter than other answers or more effective. And I know, like in social media, you can do a lot of testing and seeing which is working better. So that same thing can also be said in the sales environment. You should constantly be testing and evaluating and saying, you know, what can we do to move the bar? I mean, if it's taking right now, if we're an organization, for example, that's saying make more calls, maybe more isn't the answer. Maybe we should be looking at making different calls, or how can we leverage social media more effectively to have better results? And so it's the constant look at let's experiment, let's try, let's learn, let's grow together. That's what's necessary for being successful in today's world.
So I'm wondering, what's the mix of the agile mindset between the individual, the sales professional, and their organization? You know, the things you just described, I mean, it's enough for a person to embrace that. It's yet another thing to have the organization embrace the agile mindset.
Right. It is another thing, and it's a lot more challenging, and nobody, at least in the sales field, it's not done nearly enough. I mean, a lot of sales leaders, sales managers, or even entrepreneurs who are running the sales organization don't realize how crucial it is to constantly be challenging their salespeople to not just make more calls and close more deals, but to get better. And what can we do to get better? How can we take a look at every failure and figure out what we can learn from it? How can we, before we have a meeting with a client, let's look at it and figure out what can go wrong. And then after the meeting, look at what we did well, what we could do to improve, and how we can take it to the next level next time. It's a decision that has to be made. I mean, one of the things I spend a lot of time talking about in agile selling is the fact that how we learn, there's a lot of things and studies going on in neuroscience about how we learn. And one of the key factors is that we can take control of how we learn and how we think. And most people don't think about that. But the truth is, we can be the boss of our brains, and we can decide that we're going to take these actions because, you know, we're not just going to run for our monthly numbers, but we are going to actually stop and think for a while about what's working and what's not. You know, that's being the boss of your brain. I know, and I say boss of the brain, and because, you know, my kids used to say to me when they were younger, they used to say, "You're not the boss of me," you know.
Right.
You're not the boss of me, and you know, well,
yeah.
Right now, most of us are not really thinking about directing what we're focused on or directing our learning and actions towards really helping us become more agile in what we're doing and constantly getting better at what we're doing, as opposed to just being a repetitive person going through the motions, which is, by the way, what our brain wants us to do. Our brain wants us to find cruise control and continue to operate that way. As the boss of your brain, you actually have to think about how to stop that so you can be on the edge and more relevant today.
Hmm. So when you're the boss of your brain, I love that.
Sounds funny, doesn't it?
It does. And I'm going to borrow it and totally give you credit for it, Jill. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I love it. So how do you then define the buyer's journey? I've certainly heard the concept and I can get my head around the concept of understanding the buyer's journey. But how do you define the buyer's journey, or is there a difference?
I'm not sure there's a real difference. I mean, to me, well, let me just tell you what I see a lot in sales organizations. I don't see any definition of the buyer's journey. I see sales organizations talking about customers and going out and selling them, unless they're sophisticated sales organizations. But if you take a look at much of the SMB, small, medium business marketplace, I don't see that kind of definition. I mean, and to me, if you take a look at the buyer's journey, it's like, what are you doing to capture their attention? How are you getting them into your world? And there's two ways to do it. There's through, you know, social media marketing and things like that, where you pull them in and you get them to sign up and you're able to work with them and educate them and provide helpful information and guidance along the journey. And then there's also the outbound way, where you can actually target and go after people where you believe you have a high propensity of being able to serve them well. You know, but most people are not stopping to think that there are multiple decisions that a buyer makes, and every decision requires a different mode of operation.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Again, being the boss of your brain.
Mm-hmm. Here we go again. Yeah.
But you have to. Yeah. Here we go again. And believe me, I talk about this all the time, but I don't say it like that with salespeople. It's the first time I'm saying it. But seriously, I mean, I tell them, you need to find out, are they trying to decide if it's worth changing from the status quo, or are they actively looking for which options we're going to get, which options we're going to implement? If somebody hasn't decided to change, that is one set of behaviors that you have to, that's one set of how do I behave? You know, you would sell one way if they're, well, we're thinking about it, you know, or we're taking mm-hmm. a look. And if you say, well, have you decided to switch? Have you justified making a decision? And if the answer is no, we're not sure if it's worth it, but we're thinking, then you know that you have to talk with them about the business value, and you have to explore how they might benefit from making the change.
Right.
And by the way, that there's a whole boatload of content that can be produced that
exactly.
supports that kind of thing.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, if they've said, yeah, we're absolutely, the status quo is no longer effective today. I mean, we have to change if we're going to be successful. Then you have a whole different task in front of you. Now your task becomes, you know, how are we different than the other people? Why, you know, what, how much should you get? What size should you get? What should the scope of the engagement be? Whatever the decisions that have to be made at that point.
I really like the point you made about how there's a boatload of content that can be produced around that, because that's an example of how in a social business you can have no silos, and you can have marketing and sales integrated from the standpoint of collaborating to produce the content that is going to support those strategic selling initiatives. And so I think that's a real key point. Now, you mentioned boss. Speaking of boss, I have a boss for this episode, and that is my sponsor. So we're going to take a brief pause here for a message from my sponsor. Is your brand doing social or being social? Sprinklr has been hailed by a leading analyst as the most powerful social technology on the market. Brands using Sprinklr's software can accelerate their maturity in their use of social to be social at scale. Sprinklr's end-to-end cloud-based social infrastructure empowers an enterprise to innovate faster, grow revenue, manage risks, and reduce operational costs, all while engaging in social channels, whether locally or around the globe. Download the Social at Scale Journal, Volume 1. Are you ready for the connected consumer revolution? Just go to socialbusinessengine.com/sprinkler. And Sprinkler is spelled Sprinklr. Okay, we're back. Jill, let's talk about skills. Now, you know, skills development in sales is not a new concept by any means, but it's important. So how do sales professionals in this agile selling world pick up new skills?
Deliberately and with practice. And I say that very, very mindful that it may sound trite, except it isn't. I mean, if you take a look at most of the people who are out there selling today, many of them have not done anything to upgrade their skills in the last 5 years. Some people are new in the last 5 years, but I can tell you based on research into neuroscience, what happens is that within 3 weeks, people's activities are set. You know, mm-hmm. When they call somebody, they're on cruise control. By the third week into the job, they're not much learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what do you have to do? You have to constantly, again, be testing. For example, if you're coming out with a new product or service, and you just have to talk to somebody about it. And anybody who's in business should be seriously thinking about this. When you first explain something to another person, it really does come out as gobbledygook. You know, because you go into like overdrive and you explain everything that is going on. I mean, I know I suffer from this same syndrome when I come out with something new. It's like I'm so excited, I want to tell everybody about it, you know, and I blah 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 blah. You know, so simple thing, just a very simple skill is the skill of explaining something to somebody, and it needs to be tested. And mm-hmm. people should not just go out to clients and do it and see what works. They should actually be engaging other people in their company to listen to them and provide them feedback. And
is that what you mean by practice safe selling, Jill?
Yes, that's exactly, yes.
Okay.
That's what I mean by practice safe selling.
Okay.
Sounds kind of weird, doesn't it? No, but the truth of the matter is you want to do things ahead of time so you make your mistakes in private, not
right.
in public.
Right, right.
And most salespeople don't want to role play because they don't want to look stupid in front of somebody else. But the worst thing is looking stupid in front of your customer and making
yeah.
boneheaded mistakes in real time when you can't call them back and pause and, you know, go back and rewind and the whole sequence and, you know, wait a second, Mr. Customer, let's stop and let's go back and let's try it over again. You don't have that chance.
That's right.
You know, when you're actually with somebody. So yes, you have to practice and get feedback on a regular basis. And, you know, and I'm saying this because I do this as well. Whenever I have something new to do, I get feedback from others before
yeah.
I do it because
yeah.
I don't have a lot of, you know, opportunities to spare. I want to capture every opportunity I have.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's perfectly logical. And in my world, I think of whenever I speak, whenever I give a presentation, I always run through it several times so that, you know, your speaker, you know, when you're standing in front of your audience, you want to be well prepared, well rehearsed, and really ready for any situation. And the same is true of a selling situation.
Right.
So, yeah, makes total sense.
I just spoke the other day at Dreamforce, and I had, you know, a fairly large crowd, and I had some people in the group that were there that I knew, and I am actively seeking a debrief from them right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I do this all the time, but this is a newer topic for me, what I was talking about, and I'm seeking a debrief to have them tell me where I could improve. This is the kind of mindset we need all the time.
Yeah.
Because it helps us hone what we're doing so that we can be the best we can be or the most effective we can be in whatever discipline we're working at.
Yeah, and what you remind me of is just the fact that we live in this hyper world where everything in life happens so fast. Every aspect of our life is moving so fast. So getting feedback, getting that constructive input from peers, you know, bosses, friends, people in the audience, et cetera, absolutely critical. Let's talk about, there's a section in your book that, we could probably do a whole podcast around this section, success habits of agile sellers. What are just a few of those success habits that you'd like to share on this episode here today?
I would, first of all, like to stress multitasking and talk about that. because I think a lot of people pride themselves on their ability to multitask. And one of the things that research is showing right now is that multitasking is just about the stupidest thing you can do. And there's some significant research to back that up. And by multitasking, you know, like one of the studies that I mentioned in the book was about the ability to hold two cognitive tasks in your mind at one time. Like I'm thinking about this presentation and I'm doing the webinar with you,
podcast with you.
You know, that's two things I'm trying to hold in my mind concurrently. Well, the brain is functionally incapable of holding two things in the mind at the same time. And instead it goes back and forth. Remember this, remember that. You know, it's like it bogs the whole.
Well, wait a second. You have a chapter here called Upgrade Your Brain. Can't you do it there?
I'm joking
with you. I'm actually joking with you.
This is what I'm talking about. No, we got to upgrade the brain because it's not functionally able to do this. And the only way you can do it is a single task, one thing at a time. I mean, the studies will show that going back and forth between two cognitive tasks will actually it'll make you take, like, I think it's 20 to 40% longer to learn something new if you're bouncing back and forth. 20 to 40%, that's huge. So your brain can't handle this. You got to write things down, not trust your brain at all. And the second thing it showed is that it can take somebody who is the equivalent of a Harvard MBA with intelligence and break them down to that of the level of an 8-year-old. That their cognitive ability degrades that much. So if you want to get stupid fast, try to do two things at once. If you want to make bad decisions, do two things at once. If you want it to take longer to do anything in your life, do two things at once. Multitask, bounce back and forth.
So what you're saying then is a key success habit of a successful agile seller is single tasking, laser focused on the task at hand. The activity that you're doing now should have 100% of your attention.
Right. And if you really want to be smart about it too, you will start blocking similar tasks. So if you're making calls, you would block your calls together because now you kind of get on a roll for making calls.
Right.
If you have some proposals or presentations to put together, you would do those and all on in a, you know, in a row. Because the brain gets on a presentation focus, and so you become much more in sync and you're able to get more done faster.
Okay.
But this applies to everybody, not just salespeople.
Absolutely. Okay, terrific. Well, there's so much that is in your book, Agile Selling, that is just so tempting that we could go on and on, but what I want to do now, Jill, is I want to segue into my one thing question. And Jill, you know that that is where I ask you if there's any one thing that you could change about the way that business is conducted today, what would that be?
Personally, I would remove shareholder value as the primary driver of corporations. I think it drives greed and makes bad long-term decisions for the company and the customers and the employees. I can't stand to see people being laid off, good people being laid off, so some executive can make a gazillion more dollars. I see smaller companies selling to bigger companies and they're not getting any traction because the person that they're calling on will say, oh my God, yes, this will save us a lot of time and effort and it's really good, but it's not big enough and I'm too swamped and I can't do anything with it. You know, I mean, to me, they're so downsized and organizations are running so lean and mean that people are overwhelmed at work there. And the only thing that's driving the whole thing is the profit motive. And, you know, I think we can get by with a little less profit and a whole lot more focus on the human being, their potential, getting the maximum from them. You look at all the employees, because that's the primary paradigm in organizations, you see 70 to 80% of employees would be willing to jump ship, you know, if a better offer came along. You know, they're detached. They're not contributing their best. I mean, everything relates from the fact that it's all about shareholder value driving the thing as opposed to customers and employees.
You know, you're brave to say that. I applaud you for saying that because not a lot of people would say that. And what you remind me of is how many times I hear, I think I just heard this, if I remember, if I'm not mistaken, and I haven't actually checked online to see the data, but I think Google just announced earnings that fell short of analyst expectations, even though their year over year sales were up by X percent. But they didn't quite meet analyst expectations, so as a result, the stock price took a hit.
Right, and now they're going to be squeezing everybody in the corporation. They're going to maybe make him work harder, commit more. They're going to lay off people. You know, they're going to look for up. I mean, you take a look at the whole steamrolling thing because the analysts wanted more. Sorry, I'm just sorry. That's the wrong way to do it. Google is growing well. People love Google. They have engaged employees for the most part. You know, they're not meeting earnings. Good Lord, some major shareholder isn't going to get more money. I'm sorry. Doesn't make me happy. People won't like me who are listening to this podcast probably, but that is an underlying thing that just, if I could change one thing, I would really focus on employees and customers. Well, and I don't think that the people at the top need any more money. The middle class needs it. And we need more people working.
Jill, my speculation is that there isn't anyone listening to your words right now that would have much struggle with that, you know. And if they did, they're probably one of the people that are profiting from the shareholder value equation.
It's the wrong equation. It's simply the wrong equation for the world.
Well, it's why so many companies stay private. And even go private after some period of time of being public.
Yes. And that's why the small and medium businesses are the ones that are really the lifeblood of our country right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Mm-hmm. Well, let's end it on that positive note. But of course, before we end, Jill.
That sound real positive.
No, well, small and medium-sized businesses are the lifeblood of our economy. That's positive.
Yes, they are.
And that's where the jobs are created. You know, you and I live in that world as entrepreneurs.
Where innovation happens. It's
absolutely.
Where people go to work and like their jobs.
Absolutely. And great cultures exist and people go to work for more than just a paycheck. So that's very much a positive note. But let's let people know where they can find Jill Conrath online, get to know more about you, your books, your training, your speaking, your awesome newsletter, all of that.
Well, it's pretty easy. They just go to my name, jillconrath.com, and that's Conrath with a K, not C. Okay. Everybody spells it wrong. But go to jillconrath.com. I've got tons of free stuff on the website that people can download about, you know, how to get better at sales. Yeah, I do. It's all free.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. Terrific. Well, Jill, thank you so much for joining me here today on the Social Business Engine podcast. I've really enjoyed chatting with you on the subject of selling and agile selling. You really are a resource to our economy and to all the people that you touch. You're just a delightful person to know and to get to know and engage with. And I'm just really grateful for you to be here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate a chance to talk with you.
Terrific. Talk to you soon. Wow. Jill Conrath sure is a wealth of insights into modern selling best practices. Hey, I encourage you to pick up a copy of any of her three best-selling books, including her latest book, Agile Selling. Just go to jillconrath.com or just visit our show notes page at socialbusinessengine.com/podcasts for a link to her website. Hey, this episode is sponsored by Sprinklr, the only end-to-end integrated social relationship infrastructure so you can go from doing social to being social at scale. Download the Social at Scale Journal Volume 1, Are You Ready for the Connected Consumer Revolution? Just go to socialbusinessengine.com/Sprinklr. Hey, if you're new to my podcast, I want you to know that Social Business Engine also has a video channel where I interview people from brands such as Humana, Homes.com, Groupon, PGA Tour, the Tampa Bay Lightning, Walden University, and others who share their successes on their social business journey. You can find all of our podcasts and videos at our website at socialbusinessengine.com. You know, I always welcome your feedback on my podcast or my video channel by engaging with me on Twitter at Bernie Borges or also at SB Engine. And don't forget to follow our hashtag SBE Show. Until next time,
This is Bernie Borges of Find and Convert, wishing you continued success on your social business journey.